Just 2 days left in July. Which Auburn quarterback made the biggest splash in this generation in his debut in the orange and blue? That is coming up. Plus, who could Auburn upset and who could upset Auburn? We'll look at the schedule. We'll answer some of your questions today on a solo Village Vice. Zach is away. Zach sent us last night the first card that he got at this card show that he's at in Chicago. It's apparently like it's called The National. I don't know this world, but I don't think it's possible to have a better card with Auburn connections than what he sent in our group text last night. I can't wait for him to show this off to everybody probably Monday because he's not on the live tomorrow. All right, that's enough. So thanks for being here. We really appreciate it, whether it's audio, YouTube, however you get the show. I want to start with something that I was very surprised to see yesterday, Wednesday. John Summerall, the Florida coach, tweeted a screenshot of Dan Orlovsky sniffing a shoe. Why would he do this? Why would he do this is a loaded question. Let's back up a little bit in case you haven't been following. So John Summerall's wife, a week or so ago, tells a local reporter on camera that his little happy is that he loves pedicures every 2 weeks during the football season. That's his little happy, his little extra for himself that he does every couple of weeks. All right, he's going to take some ridicule for that. And like right or wrong, the question in July isn't whether or not men should get pedicures. Like that's not important for this conversation. It's not the conversation. You're going to be ridiculed. Like, this is just kind of a thing. It's locker room stuff. You're going to be ridiculed for it. Should or shouldn't doesn't matter. You're going to catch some flack. It's fun July talk. Okay, next step is ESPN's morning show discusses it. And the panel there, including Orlovsky, says, yeah, men shouldn't be getting pedicures. Again, not the part that's important. So John Summerall on Wednesday pulls up a clip from about a week ago of Orlovsky interacting with a shoe and posts a screenshot with a thumbs up emoji. And, you know, a lot of people are, oh, this is great. Oh, Summerall clapping back and, you know, kind of having fun. And it could be, it could just be fun. It could be left in the month of July. Like when that calendar flips over tomorrow night to August and football month is finally here, maybe it goes away. But if I'm a Florida fan, I'm a little bit concerned. And here's why. And if I'm an Auburn fan and I'm looking at Florida on the schedule in week three, I like this. I like that the Florida football coach is engaging with Dan Orlovsky over pedicures right before fall camp starts. If I'm an opponent on that Gator schedule this year, should the head coach of an SEC team be concerned with this? Is it a sign that maybe it touched a nerve? Usually, right, it's the hurt dog that barks the loudest, or what's that expression? It clearly touched a nerve, or else the coach would leave it alone. Kind of like, again, another very recent example of this, at Media Days where the phone goes off, and you're like, hey, I'd throw you out of a meeting, I'd throw this podium, I was only kidding. Oh, I'm only kidding. I'm just having some fun with the guy on TV. I'm only kidding. Maybe. But is that where the focus of an SEC head coach should be right before camp starts? I'm hearing from a lot of people that it doesn't sound like something a focused and presumably successful SEC coach would do. It sounds like, well, it sounds like something Brian Harsin would do. I'll let you sit with that for a minute. It sounds like something Brian Harsin did. Remember how he passed out the hats and then got ridiculed for it and then turned it into a T-shirt a week or a year or so later? He was still on it. Looking back, kind of an indicator, like you can make the reasonable case that that was an indicator that maybe he wasn't spending his time, focus, mental energy in all of the areas required to spend your mental energy in order to run a successful program. Might mean nothing in July. Might only be interesting. Might also be important the closer we get to the season. So what do you think? Now, look, there are a couple of different Summerall camps, and it's interesting because Auburn people are a little bit divided on John Summerall. There's a big segment. I think most in the fan base go, no, AG is our guy. Let's move forward. We're not like Summerall's just an opponent on the schedule now, and that's it. But a lot of people are kind of – a lot of people got to know him a little bit during the search process, and I'm talking about fans. And you're just going to like him, and it doesn't matter what he does. You're going to like it because you like him, and that's fine. There are different camps. But I'm curious where you fall on John Summerall taking his time and tweeting at the ESPN personality that mentioned it on his show. All the other stuff I think is perfectly reasonable. When that clip gets out, it's reasonable that it's going to be talked about. It's reasonable there's going to be some ridicule. Justified and reasonable are two different things. So it's not surprising that it happened. But I think it's interesting that he spent time and energy on it in the same way that he spent time and energy on the reporter whose phone went off at SEC Media Days. All right, next subject up. After we tell you that today's show is brought to you in part by Roback, go to roback.com. R-H-O-B-A-C-K is the website. Barn20. Is the promo code. I thought we had a video or a graphic or something. This is again what happens when the show goes solo. I feel like a stand-up comedian who's piloting material. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I can't find the Roback graphic. Oh, well, roback.com, R-H-O-B-A-C-K, 20% off everything, their polos, their quarter zips. I know it's like just suffocatingly hot right now. It won't always be. And when that weather starts to turn cooler and you're looking at the October and the November football schedule and you want a quarter zip, the best quality quarter zips are coming from Roback. So get 20% off everything right now. They make great gifts as well. Roback.com, a proud supporter of Village Vice. Yesterday we were talking about best season debuts for Auburn football players, individual season debuts. And a viewer on YouTube brought up a great point. This is from AU Templin, said, I would submit Rudy against Wyoming in 2000. I don't know how he didn't think about Rudy Johnson against Wyoming in the year 2000. First game at Auburn, a sign of a turnaround for the program, 27 rushes, 174 yards, 3 touchdowns. Now, look, it's tough to beat the sheer numbers of Bo, like 23 carries, 290, and 4 scores against Southwestern Louisiana. But it wasn't Bo's first year, and it didn't mark a significant turnaround in, like, the identity of the team. That game against Wyoming in 2000, Tuberville's second year, they went out, they got Rudy from junior college, Butler County, and they said, we're going to get back to running the ball. This is our identity. And he carried it for 174 and 3 scores. And the last touchdown was one that you still see. Like, it's one of the great single, like, individual touchdown runs in Auburn football history, also accompanied by one of the great television calls in Auburn football history. We should have done that over the summer. That would have been a fun topic. We talk about the great radio calls. What about the great TV calls? Mike Tirico talking about how it's a one-score game and how momentum can shift on one play. And then Ben Leard hands it off to Rudy Johnson. And Tirico just, Rudy Johnson, Rudy Johnson, Rudy Johnson. Touchdown, what a run. And the camera flashes up to the old scoreboard, to the Bo Jackson image. It's one of the great, like, it's a really well-done TV moment from start to finish. Rudy Johnson had one of the best Auburn debuts. But it got me thinking, let's narrow this down even more. Byron Brown, when we see him against Baylor in just 37 days, gosh, doesn't it feel like it was just 70 a little while ago, and we've cut that in half? 37 days. What kind of debut are we looking for from Byron Brown. How about some recent Auburn quarterbacks in their debuts as Tigers in a season opener? I picked 10 in the last 25 years. I did not choose, okay, we're like not on this list are guys are like 2024 Peyton Thorne because it wasn't his Auburn debut. Bo Nix in 2020 or 21, not on here. It wasn't their Auburn debut, okay? So their first game in an Auburn uniform in a season open. There is one guy on this list of 10 that is an asterisk, and we'll get into it. So I think it's interesting that only one guy in the last 13 years has thrown for over 200 yards in this scenario. Do you know who that is off the top of your head? 13 years is pretty specific. Like starting with Gus Malzahn, one quarterback in the first game of the year in his Auburn debut. And he's the asterisk because he wasn't actually making his first career start. You got it? Jeremy Johnson. Jeremy Johnson in 2014. Remember, he started against Western Carolina in 2013 when Nick Marshall was out. But I'm gonna like allow this because of what we just maybe I think we forget just how effective Jeremy Johnson was in the first half against Arkansas in 2014. His numbers: 12 for 16 for 243 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. That was in a half. That was in a half. He tore up the Arkansas defense. A lot of people didn't get a chance to see it. Weren't there video issues or weather delay? Like it was the beginning of the SEC network. It was just all, and it was starting the year in an SEC game. All kind of weird things about the start of 2014. The quarterback debuts since then have been okay, but I would expect Byron Brown to put up better numbers than the last few. Put out the normal disclaimers. You know, first games aren't indicators of the whole season of success. They are just first games. And sometimes, you know, you don't fully understand the identity of your quarterback or your team until a few games in. I do think there's a little less of that with Byron Brown and his familiarity with the offensive coordinator, the head coach, and so many of his teammates. But still, you have to throw that disclaimer out in case John Summerall ever wants to use clips of this show for tweets. So Jackson Arnold against Baylor last year, 11 for 17, 108 yards. Now he rushed 16 times for a buck 37 and a couple of touchdowns. So total, what, 245 in total offense and two rushing touchdowns. It was a really good debut. Not an indicator of what we would see the rest of the year, but a fine debut. But look, 108 yards passing. Here's some of the other passing numbers. I won't just give you stats the rest of the show, but this is pretty numbers heavy. So kind of buckle up. Peyton Thorne against UMass in 23, 10 for 17 for 141 yards, one touchdown, no interceptions. Bo Nix against Oregon, true freshman, first ever college game, 13 for 31, 177 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions, seven rushes for 42 yards. Okay. Jarrett Stidham against Georgia Southern, 14 for 24, a buck 85, two touchdowns and an interception, nine rushes, 17 yards. So you're seeing a trend here. These last guys, the last four, like TJ Finley and Robbie Ashford, both threw for between 100 and 130 in 22. I don't remember who started that game against Mercer, but neither guy went for over 140 yards through the air. So you got to go all the way back to Jeremy Johnson to find a guy making his season debut, his Auburn debut in a season opener, who threw for over 200 yards. I think that changes this year. Do you think that changes this year? Or do you think it's a little more, you know, they've got to find themselves? It's a little bit like South Florida's opener against Boise last year, where they didn't have a play over 2 yards until the last play of the first quarter. And it's a little bit slow going. Nick Marshall against Washington State, was 10 for 19, 99 yards passing. Only 27 yards rushing. Had 126 yards. Nick Marshall. Had 126 yards of total offense in his Auburn debut. Now, new head coach, new offense, new, like, everything for Nick Marshall. Cam Newton against Arkansas State. This is better. 9 for 14. He only threw it 14 times, only completed 9 passes. Still got 186 yards. Almost 21 yards per completion for Cam in his opener. 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. And then, oh, by the way, 15 rushes, 171 yards, and 2 scores. I think Zach said something yesterday on the show, like, yeah, but it was only Arkansas State, and so, you know, there's only so much you could know. I do remember distinctly, it's not to take issue with Zach, but I do remember distinctly one of his scrambles where he danced around like 4 or 5 guys and then went far sideline, went out of bounds. And especially on the 70-yard quarterback keeper where nobody came within about 20 yards of him. It didn't really matter who it was against. There were a bunch of people in the stadium that night who said, no, this guy's clearly different. He's clear. Like, you watch some players and you go, this is clearly very different than anything we've ever seen before. And you did know that week one against Arkansas State. Some of the other debuts. Chris Todd against Louisiana Tech, 17 for 26, 255 yards. So you got to go back to Chris Todd in 2009, because remember there was an asterisk beside Jeremy Johnson. It wasn't his very first Auburn start. And I guess technically Chris Todd, starting 2009, 255, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Brandon Cox in 2005. Some people started, like, their eyes started twitching. If you don't remember, Brandon Cox made his Auburn debut in a starting role, threw it 44 times, 22 of 44, 342 yards, 2 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. And then Jason Campbell in his Auburn debut, 214 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks. He also had a rushing touchdown against Ball State in 2001. So that's 10 quarterbacks going back, you know, the last 25 years that made their Auburn debuts in a season opener. Very few have thrown for 200 yards or more. I think that changes against Baylor. I think Byron Brown, with this experienced receiving core, and I think Auburn tries to establish the run early. We haven't even got a default camp. We're talking strategy. I love it. It's here. I think they try to establish the run early, and then you hit them with those deep passes, or what I love is running back when a play breaks down. Jeremiah Cobb just kind of hang out near the line. Mekhi Davenport hangs out near the line. And Brown scrambles. They converge. You just flip it out to one of those guys for a big game. Anyway, I think Byron Brown goes for over 200 yards in the opener against Baylor. And he'll be the first Auburn quarterback to do that in his Auburn debut in a season opener in a long time. Asked you on X today, we asked for a question and answer session. And one of the questions that we got was, what opponent on Auburn's schedule do you think is most ripe for an upset? And the other side of that is, what game do you think Auburn could be upset in? And so here are my answers to those two at this point, a week before fall camp starts. I think depending on, like, Tennessee was one of the top, I saw an ESPN graphic earlier today, percentage chance to make the playoffs, and, you know, Tennessee was one of the 15 or 20 best ones. I have questions about that, but that's neither here nor there. I think that's a gettable game in Knoxville, depending on their quarterback identity. Their scheme is going to score points. But can their quarterback, whomever they get, redshirt freshman, true freshman, like, can he play mistake-free? And I like Auburn's senior quarterback in a similar scheme playing mistake-free, even in their first true road game, their first road game of the year, than a younger quarterback against a defense that's going to be very aggressive. So Tennessee is the first one that I think of. Now, remember, I'm in dumb fan mode. So I think Auburn can win everything on their schedule. But I'm trying to be objective and just take that first one on the schedule. I almost got through. I'm trying to be objective with a straight face, didn't I? What game, you know, again, I don't go into a lot of games just thinking that Auburn's going to get upset. But if I look on the schedule and I see that Florida game on September 19th and I see Tennessee on October 3rd, the first road game, Vanderbilt for homecoming on September 26th, again, depending on their quarterback situation, depending on what they've done the first 3 weeks of the season. If there's a game on the schedule, I don't like its location. Like, I like its location the least. It's that Vanderbilt game. You're coming off a night game at home against Florida. If you win that now, you got all kind of momentum. If you lose that game, you're trying to pick it back up, and it's just maybe not the same level of emotion. It's an earlier game against Vanderbilt. That's not a night game. So, you know, I'm certainly not picking Auburn to lose, but if you're just asking, you know, where I like it or where I like it least on the schedule, that Vanderbilt game is probably there. Closing the month of September, third straight home game. And before you go into this month that everybody is looking at like a murderer's row, right? You have three road games in October, just one home game. You got Tennessee, bye week, Georgia, road, bye, road. Don't like where the Vanderbilt game falls on the schedule. So those are my, I appreciate the questions. Some of the other questions we got were rank the best white sauces. That was a discussion in the post show yesterday. Creamy jalapeno from Chewy's is number one. Just about any like jalapeno ranch is going to be a really strong white sauce. I like horseradish sauce. Big fan of that. Boy, there aren't a lot of other white sauce. We discussed in the post show yesterday. I'm not a fan of Alfredo sauce. Don't like ranch by itself. So, once you get past a jalapeno ranch type of sauce or horseradish, it kind of fall off. That's kind of where my rankings begin and end. So, all right, that'll wrap up this episode of Village Vice. We appreciate you being a part of it. Speaking of the post show, if you become a member, if you are a member, you get access to the post show 4 days a week. There are also three other shows that get posted every day to the channel, including Coffee and Cornbread, which is something Christian Rao puts together, kind of a best of all the shows. There's so many shows every day on this channel, whether you listen on audio or watch on YouTube. There's a lot of content being put out daily. And you're like, guys, I love you. I can't watch or listen to everything every day. Well, Christian puts it all together in a nice like 15-minute package for you and has some fun with it too, some unique things. So you can check that out for free on audio or by becoming a member. But we'd love to hear what you want in terms of the members-only content. We're also putting out more free stuff every day. Don't forget about the live stream. This channel, if you're watching on YouTube right now, there's a live stream, 24/7 content. We'll post, shows from the week and make sure that you're current with everything that's happening here. Okay. Something really fun and unique on the post show today. We're going to go 1940s mode in the solo post show today. So we'd invite you to check that out. And appreciate you being here today. That'll do it for today's show. Remember, until next time, everyone has vices. Make sure Village Vice is one of yours.